Retired law enforcement officer, security expert, and award-winning storyteller Paul Merrick, along with his co-host Jesse Clay, former Navy SEAL and four-time heavyweight Kumite world champion, together we'll discuss the broad array of current events using their unique backgrounds to further dissect each story. The only question you have to ask yourself is, are you ready to roll? I don't know, but I've been told that these two guys are really old. I hear their views are very bold, but they believe the truth will hold. So sit right back, enjoy the show, because these two guys are ready to roll. Sound off, 1, 2. Sound off, 3, 4. Sound off, 1, 2, 3, 4. Let's roll. Hey, Jesse, you ready to roll?
Hey, Paul, let's roll.
Okay. Very special guest is joining us today, Dr. Robert Malone. I'll just say this. We're talking about vaccines. We're talking about COVID and a lot of things the last year and a half. Dr. Malone is actually, correct me if I say this wrong, basically the inventor of the technology behind the mRNA vaccines that we're now using in a lot of different respects, but especially with COVID and today. So if you could maybe add to your background.
Hey, I just want to give you a shout out. That was very well said, Paul. Other fact checkers are busy doing their best to make me look like a bad guy by saying that I'm claiming to have invented these vaccines or other things. And I'm very grateful you said it the precise way that you just did.
Well,
so thanks.
Well,
he's been practicing all day.
On that note, can we elaborate a little bit about Jesse and I have a lot of fun with fact checkers. We basically just want to reiterate, we don't do Facebook or Twitter or anything like that. This is word of mouth. You're going to be heard by several military people and law enforcement individuals. Yeah. All around the world, actually. But it's word of mouth because we don't like being told what we can say, especially when we usually say is the truth, or at least what we feel is the truth. Just a little bit of background. We did have Facebook a while back, about a year ago, and they took us down. Like, I don't want to go in great detail, Doc, but basically took us down because Jesse likes to wear watches. So they thought that was somewhat racist, so they took us off the air for a while. So we just said, you know what, we're done. Anyway.
It was Omega.
Yeah, it was an Omega. So anyway, what I would like you to do is elaborate on some of these fact checkers and why they're actually wrong. Because when I read this stuff, I mean, it's like telling the guy who invented the wheel it doesn't roll. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Right. So you wanted to start with the Reuters fact check that spike is, in fact, not toxic.
Yes.
So one of the problems with these fact checkers is that companies like Reuters have, and now Facebook, have issued contracts to these companies that are kind of pop-ups that, I mean, it's a great business if it's, you know, it's great money if you want to get it. You don't really have to have any experience or expertise. You just have to say that you're a fact checker, and that's good enough. So one of the people that have done fact checking on me is a self-described actor, also describes himself as a dog, and he looks to be about 22. He wears a hoodie. He's got no science education. I'm not sure if he even has a bachelor's degree. And the Reuters team is headed up by a sociologist.
Oh, wow.
And there's actually two teams, one in the UK and one in Toronto in Canada, at McGill University. And often these are people that have a sociology background. They don't have a science background. Otherwise, they would be doing this. and they don't understand the nuances in the wording. This is like when LinkedIn kicked me off, and then I got a vice president of LinkedIn engaged because I had a friend in Silicon Valley who called him up. And in the end, he admitted that LinkedIn just doesn't have the expertise to fact check me. Thank you. And he actually apologized. Now, the odd thing is that the other day, just yesterday, LinkedIn kicked me off again. They didn't, once again, they didn't tell me why. And he's busy looking into this. But what he cites as the reason is because of one of these little fact checker organizations claiming that I wasn't the guy that came up with the mRNA vaccine concept and technology. So it goes around and around. What's happening, and it's not just me, it's a lot of other physicians and scientists, is these pop-up companies are hanging out their shingle. They get money from Facebook or Reuters, and the money that comes into Facebook comes in from Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, World Health Organization, Wellcome Trust, these people that have an admitted agenda that they want to take out any dissenting opinion or alternative narratives.
Why is that?
And so why is that? That's a good question. Let me get to that in a minute. So in terms of the story with Reuters saying that Spike isn't toxic, that took me about 30 seconds, maybe 2 minutes, to pull up the peer-reviewed articles. There's about 8 of them now. They keep coming. And what they did is they took my words from that Dark Horse podcast, and they twisted them. I was talking about spike protein, and they said, well, there's no evidence that the spike protein expressed from the vaccine is toxic. Well, I was talking about spike protein, and in fact, there is tons of evidence that spike protein is toxic. It opens the blood-brain barrier. It damages endothelium. It activates ACE2 receptor. That's what it does. Mm-hmm. There's directly cytotoxic, none less than the Salk Institute published that. It goes on and on and on. But they don't care about that. What they do is they take that and then they twist the words and they say, well, you, Robert, said that the spike protein expressed from the vaccine was toxic. That's not what I said. And then they refute that, well, it's not toxic. Show me the data that it's not toxic. I'd love to see it. Pfizer didn't do the studies. Basically, the FDA gave them a pass. And I like to say that the rules are with these things, with pharmaceuticals, is it, you're, as a police person, Jesse, you're going to appreciate this. It's like the French judicial system, right? In France, right? You appreciate what I'm saying?
Yes.
You're guilty until proven innocent.
Innocent, yeah.
So that's the way it has to be with pharmaceuticals, is it's the job of the developer to prove that something's safe. And if they haven't done that, then we got a problem. And in this case, everything was so rushed that the FDA, in their wisdom, decided that they didn't need to verify that the expressed protein was safe. They didn't verify how much of it is being made after you inject it into animals or humans, mm-hmm. where it's being made, and for how long. None of that information is known. What is known now is that there is a spectrum of adverse events, is the technical word we use, so complications, mm-hmm. Associated with both categories of vaccines, adenoviral vector vaccines and mRNA vaccines, both of which are gene therapy products, and with the virus itself. So there's something in common between the virus and both kinds of vaccines, because they have some similar problems, like causing blood clotting and microcoagulation. Mm. Well, what is it that's in common between those things? I mean, this is like doing simple algebra. The answer is spike. That's what's in common. Now, I got so excited about that, I forgot your second question, Paul. What was the other one?
Before we go any further, could you let everybody know what publication was released today at 2:00 so we can get them up to read it?
So Peter Navarro, you remember real back, you may remember Peter got the short end of the stick during the Trump administration to kind of solve all the mess that got made by CDC and BARDA.
Right.
and come up with solutions for the drugs that we didn't have and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. He was actually, Peter was brought into the administration as an economist to help sort out the infrastructure problem and what we were going to do in that. And yeah. then he got reassigned to try to solve the drug problem. And he wasn't exactly prepared for it, but he has absolutely been in the hot seat and at the tip of the spear. And perhaps your folks know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But so Peter and I spent some time together on this Steve Bannon podcast production called The War Room.
Oh, yes.
Last Saturday. And what happened was he had called me up asking me to Zoom in on a podcast, and I started talking to him about the latest information that had been revealed by the CDC, or not really. It was leaked from the CDC to the Washington Post, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And I started talking to him about what all that meant. And he said, this is so important. You've got to come up to D.C. So I got out of bed early and drove up to their D.C. studios, which is about an hour and 15 minutes from here. And we spent the morning together and worked up this presentation. And then we got finished with that. And Peter said, well, now we got to write an editorial. So he drafted it. I edited it. He then edited my edits and floated it around, and it just got published in the Washington Times. So the title in the Washington Times is Biden team's Misguided and Deadly COVID-19 Vaccine Strategy.
Wow.
Vaccination arm race could prove dangerous to the American public.
Wow.
So there's the title, and it's a kind of a bombshell, because what it does is it lays out a different way of thinking about how we should be responding to this.
Uh-huh.
And it's a strategy. It's not, I'm not the only person. A lot of us, what's happened is since all of this censorship on social media and whatever, a lot of scientists have been talking to me, and I've been talking to them kind of in different breakout groups, et cetera, and in podcasts like this one. Podcasts are really powerful.
Yes, they are.
And,
yeah.
And because they cut through, you know, it's not like some journalist trying to interpret. You can hear what somebody's actually saying.
Yes.
So in any case, Peter and I put together this strategy, and with advice of others, like there's an eminent virologist in the Netherlands that I used to work with at Solvay, named Gert van den Bossche, and others have contributed to it. But the basic idea is that it's not a good idea to do universal vaccination, because what it's going to do is drive the selection of vaccine escape mutants of the virus, because it's basically training all of our immune systems to respond in the same way. And so all the virus has got to do is to figure out how to trick, you know, how to evolve to escape that one way, and then we're all susceptible. Normally,
yeah.
What happens with natural infection, because we're all genetically different, we're really diverse in the genes associated with our immune system, that's a really good thing. Because if some of us have genetic characteristics in our immune system that make us less able to fight off a given virus, a lot of other people are going to have different genes, and they're going to be more able to.
Mm-hmm.
Fun fact, this is why many of the Neanderthal genes still persist in us. Is it turns out that Neanderthals had some really good immunologic genetics. Because they had been living in Europe, and when the influx came from the Mediterranean and Africa up into Europe, there was a lot of interbreeding, but those people didn't have good immune genetics to fight off the pathogens that were in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So they just over the generations genetically selected to keep the Neanderthal genes that were responsible for that. So it's kind of the same thing. Is the problem with universal vaccination is it's going to drive us all to have the same kind of immune response, And once the virus figures out how to get around that, we got a problem. Yeah. Justin.
Is that,
and so
can I ask you one quick question? That yes. Does that you think that might relate to that the study or the numbers they have from Massachusetts about how 74% of the people that were diagnosed actually had been vaccinated, but they were diagnosed with the Delta virus or variant? Sorry.
So the Delta virus may be a sign that this is happening.
Mm.
Okay.
And now we have the Lambda variant that's even more resistant to vaccines. And we have this talk going around, you know, it's always like blaming the other guy.
Okay.
So
Jesse does that to me all the time, Doc.
Saying the bad guys are the ones that haven't been vaccinated.
Oh.
But the ones that are driving the selection are the ones that are vaccinated. That's just basic, you know, genetics 1A.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you guys, you know, you don't have to have a PhD to figure this out. And
is
one of these, you know, pretty much everybody can see it if once they're given a clue. So it's not the unvaccinated that are causing this. It's the vaccinated. And it's the large numbers of vaccinated that all have the same vaccines all over the world. This is a bad idea.
Wow.
So the better idea that many virologists and vaccinologists are trying to advance, and Peter and I talk about in this editorial, is what we really need to do is save the vaccines for the people that really, really need it. People that are at very high risk for death and disease.
Okay.
That's mm-hmm. actually a pretty small fraction of the population. And in the U.S., most of them are already vaccinated.
Okay.
So this is elderly and and morbidly obese and mm-hmm. you know, those and people that have pre-existing conditions. Most of the people that die, particularly the elderly, have three or more major pre-existing conditions. There's actually apps that you can get, put on your phone, that predict pretty well what your risk is.
Wow.
So it's not a big stretch to figure out who's at high risk and to say, hey, you guys, you're the ones that ought to get vaccinated. And to say to everybody else, you know, the probability that you're going to end up at the hospital is pretty low, but we've got to give you something. And what we have right now are imperfect drugs, but they work pretty darn good. And by the way, they're generic and cheap.
What are they, Doc?
Things like ivermectin.
Oh, he said the I word.
I know, I did. Don't put this on YouTube. So I just took my first ivermectin doses this morning. I've got long COVID.
Oh.
And I got my prescription filled at Walmart right around the corner. They cost about $4 a pill at Walmart. I'm told that's too high.
Wow.
And in many places you get it more like $2 a pill, and in Mexico it's $1.50.
Wow.
So, and by the way, Mexico, they're not giving out vaccine. They just make ivermectin freely available over the counter, just like you buy, you know, Tylenol.
That's the suppository, right? That version, I guess, or you can take both.
That's not the way I heard it.
What have you been listening to, Paul?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So oral ivermectin is cheap. Yeah, I didn't want to go there.
No, I'm sorry. I heard that was more effective,
let's just park that one.
Okay.
You guys can talk about that in a separate podcast. So in any case, what we're putting out, and it's not just us. There's a lot of leading, you know, people that feel that are senior scientists and physicians that are comfortable speaking out against the dominant narrative, where all over the world everybody's saying everybody's got to be vaccinated. These are folks that, like I said, are serious thinkers, seriously experienced. And the logic is, let's make these drugs available and get them to people. And the important thing is to get them on drug as soon as they get infected, or as close thereafter.
Yeah.
And to the two drugs that we're advancing with the this obscure you know, counterculture group called the US Department of Defense. Defense Threat Reduction Agency.
Oh god.
Joint Science and Technology Office, okay? Those are the people I work with.
Right.
Not Tony Fauci. OK, okay, the ones that were about to move into the clinic, and by the way, they're very happy with me, and they looked at this new op-ed, and they looked at my podcast. I just got a call this morning for about an hour and a half. You know, Paul, you may appreciate, he's a senior GS-15.
Oh.
So this is basically Brigadier General level.
You know what, Doc, I got to tell you, Jesse's the SEAL, I'm the ex-cop. Just so you.
Ah, okay. All right. So Jesse, you understand?
That's okay. But I'm a medic. I was a PA, and also I work on three different nonprofits for police officers. So I just came back from Chicago, listening to officers from all around the country, over 400, telling me what they're going through with implementing mandates for the vaccination and mandates for masks. And this is totally crazy.
So Jesse, I thank you for that background. So SOCOM is a primary client for DITRA JSTO.
Yes.
So Special Ops is our customer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's our most valued, important internal customer. And that's our job, is to protect special ops among all, you know, certainly all military personnel, but most importantly, to come up with systems that will allow special ops to go into theater and be protected against the nasty stuff that's out there and might be out there in the future. That's our job.
Yeah. So, and I thank you for that.
Yeah. I thank you for your service. So what our approach has been is DOD DITRA has been using COVID and SARS-CoV-2 as basically a proof of concept proving ground. And we've been testing and developing systems and implementing them and learning from trying to rapidly respond to this and encountering all the obstacles that we're encountering. Mm-hmm. We're about to go into the clinic with the combination of high dose famotidine and celecoxib. These are two generic pills that are very stable. They're thermostable. And Jesse, you'll appreciate as a medic the need to be able to put something into your pack and not have to worry about whether or not you're taking an ice bag.
Yep.
okay.
Absolutely. Kind of hard to do that in the jungle.
yeah. So famotidine is marketed under the name Pepcid. And celecoxib is marketed under the name Celebrex.
Mm-hmm.
They both have very good justification for mechanism of action. And in our hands to date, in patients, they are wicked good when they're put together. But you got to use enough Pepcid. So the Pepcid dose is about 60 to 80 milligrams. So that's 3 to 4 of those 20 milligram tablets taken 3 to 4 times a day, depending on your size. Okay, so you take that for 14 days, and you take celecoxib under this. That one's by prescription.
Yeah.
That one is 200 milligrams twice a day for 5 days. Now, we see added benefits by adding ivermectin on top of that in the outpatient environment, and that is 200 micrograms per kilogram. Okay, get that through your head, not migs.
Yeah.
200 mics.
Yeah.
That's 0.2 migs per kilogram body weight. Taken in our, you can take it daily. So once daily for 5 days or days 1, 3, and 5 on top of the famotidine celecoxib. And that seems to really, if you get it on board early, it's cheap. It's generic. The big pharma can't make any bucks on it, and it seems in our clinical experience to date to stop the development of some of these long COVID problems, many maybe all of them, and stop the loss of taste and smell and some of those other symptoms.
Wow.
So that's what we're testing in DOD space. Hmm. And we're also about to launch a big clinical trial in India. So an outpatient trial in the States, an inpatient trial in the States, an inpatient trial in India is what's about to happen. And I can't say for sure I'm not telling you this is the miracle cure, but it seems to be more potent and active than ivermectin. And, and it has the advantage of being readily available and cheap as in India it's cheap as dirt. Here it's a little so unless you're a police force stationed in Bangalore. So that's what we're doing on the DOD side. And so my point is mostly, and there's other agents, Miraviroc, there's other ones that are being advanced or look very promising, repurposed drugs. Mm-hmm. I was just on a government call. Actually, it's a NIH Foundation for NIH group called ACTIV, ACTIV, about an hour ago. And there they were running through the data on one of the antibody products that they've been testing, monoclonal antibodies. And that trial had failed. And the postmortem on that trial that was ongoing for an hour today was, you know, how the heck, why did it fail? Because it worked really good in cell culture. The problems were that the virus resistance developed really fast, even in the patients receiving it. So the viruses were able to escape the monoclonal. And furthermore, there was evidence that the monoclonal was contributing to antibody-dependent enhancement. So this is the big bear in the woods right now.
Yeah.
In addition to this long-term problem that if we vaccinate everybody, we're almost guaranteed to make super virus.
Oh, boy.
So not a good idea.
No.
The other thing that's come out is, as you know, the Delta variant, and you were mentioning, Paul, just a moment ago, the Delta variant is infecting people that have previously been vaccinated.
Right.
And it's replicating at least the same level in those that it infects that have been vaccinated as people who weren't vaccinated. And it seems to be just as if your ability to infect somebody else, if you are infected and vaccinated, is about the same as if you were unvaccinated. So a lot of people are saying, what the heck?
Right.
Why get vaccinated?
Yeah, they're saying other things too, Doc, but yeah, you're worse than that.
So the Delta is, and like I say, Lambda is supposedly even worse in terms of vaccine escape. Now, you mentioned this Massachusetts study, Paul.
Right.
There's data emerging now from Israel, which is ahead of us in the vaccine curve, right? Israel got a sweetheart deal from Pfizer. They got a deal that they got vaccine early because Pfizer knew that the Israelis are really good about doing what the government asks them to do because they're constantly at war.
Right.
And, you know, if the government says time to get in the shelter, most people are like, okay, yeah, I think it's probably time to get in the shelter. Well,
10 square miles. They work together pretty well.
So Pfizer knew that the Israeli population was pretty compliant, and they cooked a deal with Mr. Netanyahu and his government. And the deal, apparently, that I've gotten firsthand from Israeli scientists was that Pfizer provided the vaccine early. In exchange, they got access to all the data that would be generated. Furthermore, they got a sweetheart deal that the Israeli government would not disclose any of the adverse events for 30 years. So
everybody's dead by then, so it doesn't really matter. All right. Okay.
Mic drop. Sweet deal. And of course, they got complete absence of liability, just like they have here in the States.
Right.
So they basically cooked the books, and then CDC and FDA are busy wondering, well, how come we're not hearing any adverse events from Israel? It must all be safe. Well, that's my contract, my friend.
Yeah.
You should have done your diligence.
Yeah.
So I guess, good on Pfizer for you know, making an extra $20 billion off of all of us.
Hey, Doc, let me ask you a question on that deals. On that note. You brought something to mind for me. So a lot of, I mean, the government has not necessarily done, except New York City, but how do you respond to an employer that says, if you're going to come to work, you have to get the vaccine? After listening to you, I mean, I think you have an extremely valid argument for not getting the vaccine. Unless you have certain, you know, comorbidities and things like that. But I mean, how would you respond to that? I mean, with your knowledge.
So, the problem is that technically, these are still experimental products.
Okay.
Yep.
And in the Code of Federal Regulation, there's something called the Common Rule. And I wrote a bioethics piece on, you can find it on Trial Site News if you wish, that lays out, you know, book, chapter, and verse, Code of Federal Regulations concerning the rules, the ethics rules that are supposed to guide everybody in the United States relating to experimental products. And your audience may not know, but Jesse is in a position to have a good insight into what it's like to be a Black American. And
yeah, pretty much.
Wait a second. Are you Black? Wait, okay.
And for my friends in that community, they never hesitate to remind me about Tuskegee.
Yes.
And that has led to that community, that cultural group that, you know, self-identifies to be very vaccine hesitant, very wary about anything the CDC tells them, because that was basically a CDC experiment, and very reluctant to listen, and very sensitive to bioethics, because they've been on the receiving end. People that have felt it okay to not pay attention to the Helsinki Accords and all of that. There are these rules, and the rules say that experimental products shall not be coerced or enticed. That means no free ice cream or shotguns. To get the
or $1 million,
West Virginia. So those are supposed to be the rules. But the Justice Department, in its wisdom, about a week and a half ago, came up with a determination that, well, none of that actually applies to the FDA. The FDA is separate from that, and they can do whatever they want. So I don't even know why we bother having that in the law, because they're basically saying, well, forget about the law. We don't care. And we can insist that you take the jab, even though the law says that it's not approved yet and you have to be fully informed about the risks and you have to accept it voluntarily. The government is now telling everybody, no, that's not true. We've just decided that we're going to forget about that. And
they've been doing that a lot lately, Duck.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
We're all laughing about it until we get on, you know, we're on the receiving end.
Right. I'm crying on the inside, just so you know. So just
and the two of you are you know, in your constituency are going to be the ones you know, having to administer the pointy stick.
Yeah.
Is the way things are heading. That's certainly the way it is in Sydney, Australia right now.
Oh my gosh.
You know, at the start of the outbreak, we were all laughing at the Chinese and saying, oh no, this couldn't possibly happen here. You know, look at those bad Chinese in the PRC. They manipulate their data. They force their citizens to, you know, get locked into their houses. And they,
how is this any different?
Jab.
Yeah.
And it's like, hello, here we are. So what do I say to those people? I say, you know, you're between a rock and a hard spot.
Right.
The law says that they can't make you take the jab, but then the White House says they can.
Yeah.
And so what are you going to do? For those of us, I'm a middle class guy. Yeah, I live in a horse farm, but I work for it.
You're old school.
It's not like
you worked for it.
Yeah,
you're old school. Yeah.
I was a carpenter and a farmhand before I was a physician in the sciences. It's the honest truth.
Yeah.
And my wife and I, go out and feed the horses every day. Mow the lawn and put in the posts and all that stuff. So in any case, my point is not many of us are in a position where we can just go down, walk down Manhattan Ave and, dial up our favorite lawyer and say, we'll file a lawsuit to keep them from forcing me to take the jab. They're kind of saying, take the jab or lose your job.
Right.
Yep.
All I can say is this is profoundly wrong.
Uh-huh.
And there are class action lawsuits going on. And I'm serving as an expert witness for various cases. And I'm trying to do my best. But the only way, as I see it, there are three essential constituencies that the Democrats cannot afford to lose. One is African Americans, one is suburban moms, and one is young adults. And their policies are almost as if Nancy's sitting around with Joe saying, hey, what can we do to piss these people off? Oh, I know. We're going to force them all to take the jab. I just don't get it. What are they thinking?
Can you?
It's bad science. It's bad policy. It's bad politics.
So why?
Like they're all hypnotized by Mr. Fauci.
Is it because of all the? Is it? And let me see how I should term this. Not that I really care if anybody gets mad, but is it? Do you think because certain pharmaceutical companies basically have so much control over, a good portion of our government?
That is one of the working hypotheses, is that, and for sure, the Hill is bought and paid for.
Wow.
Yeah.
By pharma. Sands and butts.
Doc, can you go in your shortest, not short, you have all the time you want, but I know you're a really busy guy. Can you just give people an idea? Because they always talk about, and I know we're backtracking a little bit, they're always talking about, it's emergency use compared to actually being approved by the FDA. What actually has to happen, the difference, so people understand it's pretty vast, the difference. Could you maybe expound on that a little bit?
So what they did for emergency use. So emergency use is our pants are on fire. We got a huge problem. People are just going to die like flies. They're going to fill up the hospitals. You remember how it was.
Right.
Yep.
And docs are dying. Nurses are dying. Cops are dying. Fire personnel are dying.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bad scene.
Yeah.
So we're going to put something out there, and we don't really know how safe it is, and we're not really sure how good it is, but it's going to be better than what we've got.
Maybe.
Right? And that's the basis for emergency use authorization, is it allows the FDA to – what they did was they basically said, okay, guys, cobble anything together. This is scary stuff. Just jam it in the tube, get it in there, and get us the best documentation you can. And if you don't do all the tests that we normally require in animals, et cetera, and safety tests and purity tests and all that, we're going to give you a pass. Not only are we going to give you a pass, but we're going to make it legally so that no one can sue you.
Wow.
Okay. And furthermore, we're going to pay you $1 billion or more to do this. And then we're going to buy it from you for another couple billion. So if you're Pfizer, you're like, what's not to like?
Yeah.
It's a no-lose situation.
Yeah. So what they did was basically allow the pharmaceutical companies to get by with really minimal characterization and safety and assessment because the threat was so big. And they did really abbreviated clinical trials, and they stacked them on top of each other, and they didn't follow them for a long period of time. And they said, okay, it looks good enough. Let's go ahead and give emergency use authorization and deploy it to, a billion people or so.
Right.
Again,
let's try it out.
What could possibly go wrong?
Hey, Israel, here you go.
Yeah, and yeah. So that's it. It is fast, loose. Did they cut corners? They cut every single corner they could think of.
Wow.
That you know they thought they could get away with, and they thought they could dispose of. But these are processes and tests that have been developed over decades and decades and decades of experience in vaccine development. And they basically said, it's such an emergency, we're just going to throw all that stuff out the window for the most part. And then the developers were supposed to go back and do all that hard stuff while we were all getting our jabs.
Yeah.
And then normally what we did just to compare with Ebola, we did something called expanded use access. So this is the first time we've done this, emergency use like this,
yeah,
since the anthrax attacks.
Okay.
Okay. Jesse, you may remember that.
Yep, I certainly do.
Yeah, so since the anthrax attacks, and you'll recall as a service member that those anthrax jabs were not the best product either back then.
No.
And that it caused that the lawsuits after that brought on behalf of the military personnel caused
huge.
The U.S. Department of Defense to totally change its approach.
Mm-hmm.
They will not administer unlicensed products to warfighters anymore, although now they've just told the whole Department of Defense that everybody's got to take this unlicensed jab.
Yeah, they got to get a shot. Yeah.
So they've just broken their own policy that they put in place after anthrax, and I hope we don't have the same outcome.
Wow.
But
yeah.
So that's the difference, is that the emergency use products have had very little characterization, a bunch of shortcuts taken, and the idea was supposed to be that we would acquire information during this period that would allow us to rigorously say safe or not safe,
yeah,
effective or not effective. Okay, but here's the caveat: under expanded use access, like what they did with Ebola,
mm-hmm,
everybody gets put into a formal clinical trial. It's an open-ended clinical trial, and you get all the data really rigorously. What they did under emergency use access authorization, the legislation behind it, and the FDA's interpretation, is they have the discretion to force the pharma to do more or less rigorous capture of safety information.
Mm-hmm.
During the emergency use authorization period. And the option that the FDA selected was, we don't think you need to do any capture of safety information. You know,
it's all good.
If you're Pfizer, it's like perfect. Why not? I don't even have to spend money. The government said they're just going to use their passive system at the CDC called VAERS, and they're also going to you rely on the CMMS Medicare Medicaid database and the VA database,
yeah,
and reporting on the DOD databases for healthcare, and mm-hmm, they're going to put all that stuff together, even though they're all very different databases and they still haven't figured out how to make them talk to each other. And they're going to somehow derive knowledge from that. And that has turned out to be a clusterfuck at best.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so we don't have good data on the safety events. And a cynic might say that's a feature, not a bug. Right? Jesse,
yeah.
I love you. You get it. You're getting my jokes.
Yeah.
So there we are. And now they're saying they're going to jam through a licensure so that they don't have the ethical conundrum that they have right now of trying to force everybody to take the jab.
Yep.
Because what they're doing, what the feds are doing outside of the DOD, is they're saying, well, we don't have the right to force state governments to implement public health policies, and that's true. By the Constitution, those responsibilities and rights lie with the states. Yes. So individual state legislatures are the ones that have to decide their public health policy, mm-hmm. and they often seek guidance from the CDC, but it's up to them to make the decisions.
Wow.
And so the federal government is doing interesting things like telling the universities that you really have to do this or we might cut off your funding, those kind of tricks that they play.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and they're kind of pushing the states, we can't tell you to do this. Oh, but if you don't,
you'll lose funding.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how that's rolling out. And I'm sorry to your listeners that are being put in this untenable position,
mm-hmm.
where they're having to take an unlicensed product. That's not a ethical position. You know, it goes back to the Nuremberg trials.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
You know,
yeah.
It's not okay. And it doesn't make good science sense. And furthermore, how come we put all our eggs in the vaccine basket and we didn't emphasize drug repurposing and spending money on drugs? The only reason I'm able to get, you know, with my team to get where we're at right now with the drugs that we're testing,
mm-hmm.
is because we're working with the DOD, and they aren't subject to, and we justified it. Like I said, we kind of backdoored it.
Oh.
We said, oh, we're not really doing this to compete with the NIAID. We're doing this as a proof of concept for systems development,
yeah.
and lessons learned. And that's what we had to do to get the, you know,
the approval,
$25 million, $25 million that's going to take mm-hmm. to do these trials. Is we had to kind of backdoor him.
Hey, Doc, I want to, if you can, I know I found you on your blog. Do you? I'll make sure it's in comments underneath when we post this. But before we get to the end of the show, and make sure that everybody knows how to get a hold of you, at least be able to read the things that you're writing, so we can get it out to everybody. Because evidently, there's a lot of people that don't want you to be heard. Even though they always say follow the science, and we're following the guy that invented the science, and they don't want you to be heard. It just drives me nuts.
Yeah.
So could you just tell people the best way to get a hold of you? I mean, we know about the Washington Times article, but, you know, give us your little bleep here.
What I got kicked off of LinkedIn twice now, so I'm kind of done with LinkedIn.
You're not going to try for three?
No. I don't know. I've appealed it, and I've written to the vice president again, and he said he's looking into it, blah, blah, blah. But I've lost my appetite for LinkedIn. So it's about 200,000 followers on Twitter.
Okay.
And it's at RW Malone MD. All of my branding is always RW Malone MD. So the website that has our blog
uh-huh.
is www.rwmalonemd.com. It's got a bunch of stuff there. The whole document trail and history of the origin of the mRNA vaccine technology is there. All the original science and papers and patents, and you can read them to your heart's content. And
there
then,
you go.
And then there's the Twitter. And then we've just set up a Gab account, G-A-B, and Gab is being super friendly to me. The president of Gab wrote to me personally when we set it up last night, and he upgraded me so we can use Gab TV to put out our stuff.
Wow. Without, I have to check
getting,
that out.
Deleted by Twitter, I mean by YouTube.
Marxist? Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yeah. So yeah.
Like you will get deleted if you put this out on YouTube.
Yeah, we don't. We don't care.
And so we're starting to use Gab now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, and we may. I think we're gonna, just to kind of risk mitigate, we're gonna set up other accounts. But you'll always be able to find me using the RW Malone MD. Word string, and I'll look forward to for learning from your viewership. I find Twitter really useful. It's kind of a pain in the can, and it takes a lot of time. It's
mm-hmm.
time
stuff.
Right.
But I'll put out an article or an opinion or an idea or something, and I'll get 200 people telling me if I'm full of shit. It comes right back at me really quick. And you know, and I got scientists and physicians all over the world, you know, or they'll say, yeah, Robert, you're on the mark. And furthermore, here's this. Did you see it? So it's kind of a pressure cooker. You need to have a thick skin, because there's plenty of people that'll tell you when you're full of it. But I'm okay. I'm a big boy. I put on my pants in the morning and you know, go to work. And it doesn't bother me too much. So I look forward to getting feedback from your folks about this podcast or anything else.
I'm sure you will too. So you'll know.
I think the big part is mostly about the science, because there is no information. All the data we're supposed to be getting, unless you read alternative sources, you're not hearing that. I mean, you know, the big four or three on TV, that it's just a joke. It's a
joke. They're officially, they're regurgitating the party line, and it's what they have to do. There's this thing, so that I'm going to be speaking on the whole censorship stuff and what's going on out in Silicon Valley next week in California at the Liberty Forum of Silicon Valley, just to make a plug on that.
How would we find that?
The Liberty Forum of Silicon Valley. You can just Google that. And I think there's still some tickets available if anybody lives in that area. And it's a huge price you have to pay. I think it's $15. Maybe it's $5. I think it's $15 to get a ticket. Yeah, I'm a pretty high ticket guy, you know. I guarantee there's no chicken dinner involved.
Oh,
So welcome, you know, if you can get a seat, and it's also going to be streamed. But the focus is going to be on this integration that is happening in the censorship that goes across big tech, big media. The pharmaceutical industries all have members on big tech and big media boards and government. It's all interdigitated now.
Wow.
And they've set up this thing called the Trusted News Initiative. This is not a crazy conspiracy tin hat thing. Okay. It's led by another one of these obscure organizations called the British Broadcasting Corporation.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah. Because they know all about,
So the BBC, I understand in the UK, the BBC is not a favorite outlet these days. So the BBC decided, they got a new executive in last fall, and he decided that this organization that had been set up to keep basically Russian and Chinese disinformation from affecting our elections, that had tied together big tech, big media, all the newspapers, Associated Press, all those guys, Reuters, of course, they were going to turn that, and instead of using it to counter political misinformation, they were going to use it to counter what they saw as misinformation about the vaccines.
Oh my gosh.
They define misinformation as anything that's different from what the CDC or the WHO is saying. If you're doing investigative reporting and you say something other than the official party line, you will be deleted. If you're a member of this organization, it turns out you can say those things, but other newspapers can't then use your information for them. Okay, that's the way they usually sell these stories.
Right.
Is, you know, the New York Times puts out a story and then it's syndicated, or Associated Press or whatever. That's how they make their nickel. And so the new rules are, if it has to do with vaccines, they can say something unusual, but they can't sell it to anybody else, and nobody else can use it or copy it. Therefore, there's no financial incentive, which is how this world works, right? It's all about Benjamins.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that's how that game is played. So that's why you guys get nothing but, you know, the Pravda line coming into your newsfeed, is because that's it. With the exception of there's two big media organizations. I don't even know why I'm saying this. There's two big media organizations that don't belong. Okay.
Right.
And guess who they are?
Doc, I got to
Fox News and the Wall Street Journal.
I got to cut in here. Your timing is impeccable. You're not going to believe what I'm going to tell you right now, but I just got a pop-up on our little Google Meet saying they're going to shut us down in about 4 minutes. I have no idea why. I have no idea why. This has never happened before. It's ticking me off. Like, you can't, I can't.
Google is part of the Trusted News Initiative.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Oh, I just got it. Your call ends in 5 minutes.
Okay. See, I mean, I've never had this happen before. I want to say this. I want you to take the next few minutes we have or whatever, talk about whatever you want. In about 3 minutes, we'll probably, so it doesn't look weird, we'll probably cut it down. This has happened to us only once before, but that was Facebook. It wasn't on here. So,
yeah.
And good thing I am actually recording this separately on my own soundboard. So we'll have it. We'll get it out there. I want to tell you just from my and Jesse's perspective, a couple things real quick. One, we're located in Northern California, specifically Fort Collins, Colorado.
Northern Colorado.
Did I say California? Colorado. Yeah, I was a cop in California. I still have
a Freudian slip.
Yeah, Freudian. It's my blood pressure just went up 40 points. Anyway, we have a really good friend that has this amazing restaurant. I don't know if you like sushi. If you're ever out in this area, it's on us, everything. We would love to sit down and buy you some really nice sake.
Fort Collins is a special place. So congratulations for landing there.
Yeah.
My son lived in Boulder for a while, and it just got too PC. And he moved to West Virginia.
Oh.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he moved to West Virginia, and he's got a house that he paid like $300,000 for. It's a huge house, all wooden built, beautiful, on the edge of a lake in Summersville. And he's an avid rock climber, and it has awesome rock climbing.
Oh, wow.
So awesome. That there is life after Colorado if you need to get out of town. And West Virginia looks like a pretty nice place. So I don't know what else to say. We've had a good chat. You know, I guess my conclusion is to all of you, I really do try to stay science-based and avoid the conspiracies.
Right.
The politics are creeping in. I don't see a way out of this mess except through political action.
Okay.
The science, the folks that are, with the exception of DOD, the HHS group is really dug in. And I don't think they're going to, Fauci is now starting to pivot. And he's did a piece in a think tank yesterday or the day before in D.C. where he endorsed early drug treatment, but only the early drugs that are in development by the big pharmaceutical companies.
Here we
not
go
the
again.
Ones that are generics.
Here we go again.
But at least he's moved that far. So, you know, we're trying to push the narrative and say, hey, guys, you know, get with the program and save lives.
Mm-hmm.
But I really do think it's going to take political action. And my other message to your listenership, if we've learned anything from this, it's think for yourself.
Oh my gosh, we
get
say
the
that
information
all the time.
You can, and you know what this ought to spark is a new renaissance, where people realize they got to think. They can't just be sheep.
Doc, you are so on the mark. Every podcast we've ever done, the reason we started this a little over a year ago, believe it or not, is because we were tired of people not thinking for themselves and always wanting to fight with each other. We're like, I mean, we've done that. It's much easier if you just take a step back and talk to each other about it. You find out how much we're all actually very much alike.
Yeah,
so,
amen.
You know,
just get the facts.
Yeah.
If you have the
I
facts,
like to
you
say,
can't argue.
Yep. I like to say I live in a purple state. In a red county, run a farm. And I got to get along and talk to everybody.
Doc, I can't thank you enough for coming on today.
I appreciate it, Doc.
It's been, like I say, you have an open invitation. And also, if you're ever concerned about your safety, I guarantee you when you're here, we will have people everywhere. You'll be as safe as if you were in your mother's womb. So just anytime you want, just come on up.
You'd be good.
Yeah,
now, okay.
Paul.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Been a lot of
fun. Thank you, Doc. Hey, have a good one.
Hunchy, you ready to roll?
Let's roll.
All right, we're out of here. Talk to you guys later.